the Wildlife Observer Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Onward for Wildlife, the political podcast on Wildlife Observer Network. I'm your host, Tyke James, and today we are going on Word with State Representative Donna Bullock. And I'm really excited to share that interview with you. And if you're a fan of the network, then you'll know that we had her on as a guest on Brothers in Birding. So we already know she's a big fan of birds and birders. I'm feeling really super powered during the solstice, you know, so I just thought I would drop another podcast episode. In the promise to truly achieve conservation outcomes and environmental justice, I wouldn't be surprised to see your favorite environmental organization, as well as the incoming administration, increasingly publicly recruit and promote Black leadership to build the country back better. Again, if you're wondering why I said again, please see the 1619 Project in Reconstruction. Folks got to realize, it's not just about doing what you can to include Black people in your environmental movement, which is a flawed perspective to begin with. From the grassroots to the Oval Office, it needs to be about dismantling white supremacy, knowing that Black people have the most to lose under the status quo, and everybody has something to gain from an anti-racist, intersectional environmental movement. So said another way, if Black leadership is in demand, then the call to dismantle white supremacy is in demand. The call to dismantle white supremacy culture in our workplaces is in demand. Ring, ring, the call for racial justice has always been in demand. If history can tell us anything, it shows us that the evidence is clear. The evidence of the burdens, barriers, and blockers. And I'm looking at you. Just kidding. But seriously. This movement has witnessed time and time again where if you are not helping, even with your best intentions, you are standing in the way. But this episode is not about the burdens, the barriers, or the blockers. No, not this time. This episode is about the beautiful Black people who are outstanding and using their power to make space for other folks like me in the movement so that I can use my voice to share messages like this. That feels like a superpower. There has never been a good time to suppress Black people, but unfortunately, it is a huge part of this country's history. Whether that is suppressing our voice, suppressing our vote, or suppressing our leadership. That being said, where we break ground, we can change the landscape because we've always been rooted in the environmental movement. We've always been rooted in people power. Again, see the 1619 Project. So if we are going to talk about people power, and we are going to be talking about some beautiful, brilliant Black minds, I want to introduce you to the National Black Environmental Justice Network. They officially relaunched in June, and they have been talking with the Biden campaign, influencing their positions on climate policy, specifically about undoing government-led discrimination towards Black people. Now, that could mean that if there's a legislative proposal on environmental and economic issues, the Biden administration, before Biden signs, they should carefully consider the impact on people breathing in a heavier share of pollution from the fossil fuel industry, or creating opportunities for Black people to own, not just work at, green companies that lessen our dependence on oil, coal, and gas. Now, a little bit about the group. The leaders and members are some of the same folks who originally defined the concept of environmental racism because they were in court fighting it. Think of this as your favorite group of lifetime environmental justice veterans. They're like the Avengers Avengers. The National Black Environmental Justice Network was formed in December, and what a good month, of 1999, during an emergency gathering of Black leaders at a first-of-its-kind national convening of nearly 300 Black grassroots environmental and economic justice activists to map out strategies and address environmental and health disparities in Black American communities. Taking place in New Orleans, Louisiana, the gathering also included youth, labor, health, and religious organizations, attorneys, folks from academia, and a whole host of other professional groups from 33 states. Today, you can go on their website, which is easy because it's just their initials, nbejn.com, National Black Environmental Justice Network.com, just their initials. It's also in the description, and check out their environmental justice platform, where you can read more about their demands for international solidarity, education, and environmental, climate, economic, and racial justice. You can also see who's on the leadership team from their site. If you see any unfamiliar names, get familiar, because there is no feeling that is better than knowing about these legends for yourself, and then hearing their name on the news because they're going to be appointed for something, and everyone else is going to be like, who is that? And then you're going to be like, actually, I was listening to this podcast, and, you know, just the thought of that very annoying but commonplace situation brings me joy in these uncertain times. Also, shout out to College Humor. Two names I could not find on the leadership team, but two names you may already be familiar with, Brenda Mallory and Michael Regan. Yes, it's good to hear it on a podcast because this is the right way you should hear his name in your mind the next time you read it in print. And again, hopefully I can be your source for your next actually moment. But back to Brenda Mallory, nominee for the Council on Environmental Equality from the Southern Environmental Law Center, and Michael Regan, the nominee for the Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, who comes from North Carolina's Department for Environmental Quality. As I learn more about them and their work, I'll be sure to share my research in a future episode. But first, I want to recognize that they would be the first Black people to hold either position. Now, I find myself weighing my presumptive excitement for Black history to be made with a familiar, and I mean very familiar, feeling of disappointment that it took this long for a Black person to be considered. It took this long for a Black voice to even be considered to lead. HUD hasn't had that issue, but don't get me started. We've always needed better representation in our federal government, especially in leadership. And I don't think that just because it's in demand now means all things are suddenly made equal, or if it'll be any easier for the next Black person to be in that role just because we had our first. And the very same thing can be said to your favorite environmental organization. I hope you tell them first. Just because you hire one Black person doesn't mean they'll just double out of nowhere. Well, unless someone got the ability to clone themselves today, then I guess that point is moot. And we really hope all of this won't be moot because we have our eyes on Georgia, where personally I am hoping for two Democratic wins and control of the Senate because the Democratic Party would make it a little easier for these nominees to lead and fulfill the mission statements of these offices. And I find that the other party would make it a lot harder, if not impossible, just because they can. But a tiny bit of optimism, I've heard from a little bird that the mail-in ballot records are being smashed right now in Georgia. So I think something very beautiful is happening there, and I love to see it. Maybe I should talk about the news more often at the top of the show? Let me know what you think. Seriously, let me know what you think. I'd love to know. Don't forget to rate and review wherever you're listening to this podcast. Now, without further delay, let's go onward with State Representative Donna Bullock from the 195th Legislative District of Pennsylvania and the newly elected chair of the Pennsylvania Legislative Black Caucus. Congratulations on your general election and your leadership election, Rep. Nice to hear from you again.
Great to hear from you as well, Taki.
Well, I'm really glad we can have this time together to discuss a couple things. One, I want to mention to folks who aren't familiar, you are leading a block of about, I think, three dozen Democratic votes in the Pennsylvania House, which is probably incredible in that this is maybe the biggest legislative Black caucus in the country. So you are definitely one of the most powerful people in Pennsylvania, if not the Pennsylvania House. How did it all start for you?
Great. Thanks for asking. I was elected to the House in 2015 and had always known I wanted to make sure I focused on issues that impacted Black and Brown communities, as my district is largely Black and Brown. And, you know, right after being elected, shortly thereafter, I was elected by my peers to serve as the vice chair of the Pennsylvania Legislative Black Caucus and served in that role from 2016 to 2020. And as you mentioned, it is one of the largest Black caucuses in the country, in state Black caucus. Between our House and Senate, our state House and Senate, we have about 30 members, and they are diverse in every way. Black and Brown folks from across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, from cities and from some suburban areas, as well as some of our rural areas. And what is significant about that to me is that it highlights that Black and Brown communities don't just exist in cities, and that the issues that impact Black and Brown communities are just as diverse. You know, we aren't just a community of folks who are interested in criminal justice issues, which are important as they disproportionately impact communities of color. But all of the other legislative issues that come before us sometimes have an impact, negative impact on Black and Brown folks. And so when we're talking about education or healthcare or environmental justice, these are the issues that the Black caucus want to take on. These are the issues that we realize if we do it wrong, if the policy is wrong, if the legislation is wrong, that healthcare policy will disproportionately and harshly impact on Black and Brown communities. That if we do that education policy wrong, mm-hmm. it's going to hit Black and Brown communities first and the hardest. And the same thing with any other issue that comes before us as a legislature. And so I am honored to represent those voices as the chair of the Black Caucus and to lead, again, one of the largest state Black caucuses in the country. And for Pennsylvania's history, our largest for sure and most diverse mm-hmm. in perspective and experience and regional representation. All corners of the Commonwealth are now being represented by the Pennsylvania Legislative Black Caucus.
Now, thinking back to the Democratic primary that was held in June from being delayed because of coronavirus, where we witness a more progressive agenda unseat two long-term Philly Democrats, thinking about these next 2 years as a potential turning point for the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, I do see that we're moving at a pace of moderates on both sides. So as the leader of the Black Caucus, how will you set the pace for this next legislative session in Pennsylvania?
Right. So those two seats in Philadelphia that were won by more progressive Democrats were people that I'm really respect in their work, both the incumbents and those who won the challengers who won the seat. What is exciting to see is that while the cities are moving to be more progressive, and in fact, some of those progressive seats have been Black folk who have come into those seats from long-term Democrats who were not people of color. There are also still parts of our Commonwealth that remain quite moderate or conservative. And so we have unfortunately lost in our more conservative districts, lost the general election to Republicans. And so we have to continue to be respectful of the diversity in opinion and in ideology of the Democratic Party. And so for me as the chair of the Black Caucus, it's not so much about Democrat and Republican, because we could have Black caucus members who are Republican if they were elected as such, and we had such in the past. Our focus is on issues that impact Black and Brown folks. And while some of that may be progressive, leaning progressive, they're not always. And so our goal is to make sure we're representing the voices of Black and Brown communities, working across the aisle when necessary to get those things done, and pushing the envelope when it does need to be a little bit more progressive. In June, in fact, the Black Caucus took the rostrum to push our legislature to look at our police reform bills, which some may say are very progressive. But we had to push our caucus members and the Democratic caucus members to go there with us. And we had to push the rest of the General Assembly to vote for bills that were seen as, you know, perhaps more progressive, but also bills that significantly impact our communities.
That's very much appreciated. And I see that, you know, the political calculus can change at any moment. There, I think, are opportunities in 2021 in the next legislative session to perhaps reintroduce some bills. I know that you are a champion for solar and other environmental issues. So is there anything like that that you think will be reintroduced? What opportunities do you see?
Yes, I definitely think that there are opportunities to reintroduce bills and to work across the aisle to make that happen. I have had the opportunity this past session to work across the aisle to introduce, you know, not only police reform bills, but also some bills that had more of an environmental lens to it, right? So I've introduced a bill to permit community solar in our state. And I also introduced a bill around regulating e-bikes in our state. In both of those bills, my co-prime sponsor were Republicans from other parts of the Commonwealth. And we were able to find common thread, a common interest, and push these bills both through committee and to be able to get them some attention. While a lot of our work in the General Assembly in Pennsylvania, and I think across many other states, was preoccupied with the necessity of addressing the impact of COVID-19, budget cuts and budget restraints, we weren't able to get those bills across the finish line. Mm-hmm. I hope that we are able to reintroduce those bills in the next term and that we will find the will and the time and the patience to get them not just through committee, but to the House floor and the Senate floor and to the governor's desk. That is my goal. I think there is a will to collaborate to make that happen. But of course, we are being met with an unprecedented need to address a pandemic and the impact of that pandemic in our communities. And so that being understood, I still think there's an opportunity to get some really worthwhile bills across the governor's desk.
And in that same breath of what's next for Pennsylvania, a little birdie told me that Toomey is not running for re-election in 2022. I get it. A lot of folks are paying attention to the Senate elections in Georgia. Why are we jumping ahead to Pennsylvania? Because Pennsylvania is a purple state. And I think whoever wins that Senate seat, you know, will need to have some type of mandate reflective of the people of Pennsylvania. So as a person of Pennsylvania, who do you think that, well, let me say not who, but what should be on that candidate's agenda?
Right. Well, thank you for that question. Look, and what we learned more than anything in this recent election is how important Pennsylvania is in national politics, right? I mean, we decided that race, the presidential race, and we were a major player in the presidential race. And once Pennsylvania was decided, it was a wrap. We knew mm-hmm. who our new president was going to be. And we have been for quite some time the battleground state for national elections. And when it comes to the Senate race, it will be no different. I am hopeful that we could get a Democrat in that Senate seat. And, you know, with the work that needs to be put in place and on the ground and, you know, in our cities, in our suburban communities, in the other rural communities, in the diners, the churches, the mosque, we just need to hit the ground and, you know, and campaign for the candidate that we want to get down to Washington, D.C. What I am more interested in seeing is not only that we turn that seat blue, which I think we surely can do, I would love to also see that seat be more reflective of the diversity of Pennsylvania, more reflective of the diversity of this great country, that we could elect a person of color, that we could elect a woman. Better yet, how about not a woman of color to the Senate from Pennsylvania? So I will be paying close attention to the candidates that we put forth, and I hope that we find a candidate that reflects that kind of diverse democracy that I know we can get behind. And here's what I do know. Some folks count out diverse candidates. They count out women. They count out particularly Black women. And usually the conversation says something like, oh, there's no way a Black woman can win Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Well, here's something to think about a little bit. Thousands of Pennsylvanians and 75 plus million Americans voted for a Black woman when they voted for Vice President Kamala Harris as a part of our incoming president-elect Joe Biden's ticket. So this is not unfamiliar territory. People are willing to vote for Black women if they believe that that woman can do the job and she is ready to take on the task. And if we find the right candidate and we put her forth or him forth, we can definitely find more diverse candidates. And I don't buy the argument anymore that voters are not ready.
Mm.
They are ready. They've done it already. We voted for President Obama, and then now they've just voted for our incoming Vice President, Kamala Harris. That is not an argument to keep diverse candidates from putting their name into the ring.
And, you know, it was on that topic of how folks voted in the 2020 election. I found it very interesting that in 8 of the 10 counties that fracking is, you know, really big, Trump didn't do as well in those same counties, demographically speaking. So in some ways, you know, that's reading the tea leaves. But in some ways, I think environmental issues and conservation are very much what folks think about in their top 10, top 5 issues when they go out to vote. And I think that part of what Pennsylvania's future for the environment, you know, still that we have yet to see, but something to be excited about is Pennsylvania joining the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. Did you have any role in that, or, you know, what?
I've been very supportive of Reggie. You know, I joke sometimes that Reggie is my other boyfriend, but, you know, Reggie, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. I've been very supportive from the beginning when our governor announced that he wanted to enter the initiative. And I am fully behind that. I believe that we need to hold, you know, industry responsible in the communities that they are operating. And what we're finding from voters is, yes, they are concerned about environmental justice issues, and they're concerned about the air that they breathe. They are concerned about the impact of fracking on their land and fracking on their water. They're concerned about their health, right? At the end of the day, it's their health, and they realize that this fracking activity can impact their health. And so, you know, we're finding that folks come to the table for different reasons. With those reasons, we're able to address those concerns. Mm-hmm. Reggie is one way to do that, but definitely other ways, you know, working with our Office of Environmental Justice and working with advocacy groups to make sure that the voices of Pennsylvanians, whether they're in the city or whether they're in Frackville, Pennsylvania, we actually have a town called Frackville, Pennsylvania.
There it is.
right? Or even
there was Carbon County. There's also Carbon County.
Coal Township. You know? So we have a very interesting relationship with these energy industries, right? Over time, whether you're talking about coal and fracking and, you know, other, maybe one day we'll have solar township.
I believe that. Right? I believe that. I can see that.
I think we're committed to it here in Pennsylvania. And we've seen that even play out in the presidential election, right? Trying to understand Pennsylvania's relationship with fracking can be very difficult, right? And that's because there are towns and communities who have relied on the jobs, whether, you know, once it was coal, now it's fracking. They've relied on these jobs heavily. And for many of those communities, when your township is called Frackville, when your township is called Coal Township, your county is Carbon County, that is your industry. And so you have to come up with realistic transition, realistic goals so that those families, those working families, can see where their next job will be and how they will be able to provide for their family if and when we transition from, you know, fossil fuels and such. And so doing that is important. And that's why that message needs to be carefully crafted when we're trying to bring people in into that that goal, right? If it's to be carbon free or all those kinds of things, you have to be able to talk about how they're going to take care of their family as we transition to solar or other renewable energies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And last question of the day, this one is really aspirational. Black Birders Week 2021. So Black Birders Week happened last year where folks came together in a really decentralized and a really powerful way. And when I say powerful, I mean like local, Black Birders Week was local to so many people in so many ways. You know, as someone who's from Philly, don't live in Philly, like Karina Newsom, someone who's from Philly, currently doesn't live in Philly. You know, I would love to see, I don't know what the formula is with, you know, coronavirus thrown into the equation. But, you know, you're the chair of the Black Caucus. Black Birders Week is next year. You know, we have a date for it. It's May 31st to June 5th or something like that, you know, Sunday to Sunday. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, I came into birding as a parent, right? I talk about, I'm not a natural birder. It's not really something that I would have even thought I would do until my son took interest. And so I've been forced to learn more about birding than I ever thought I would in my life. But as the chair of the Black Caucus and truly an admirer of the work that you and Karina Newsom and all of the other young Black birders across our country have been doing to raise awareness and to gauge young people in birding and in nature. And I am so, so proud of that work. I think there are opportunities to work together to bring more young people, and particularly young people of color, into this space, to introduce them to not just birding, but introduce them to other you know, hobbies and things that they can do, or career paths that they can have in nature. But also, you know, just letting them know that nature is there. And particularly, you know, even here in the city of Philadelphia, I am always amazed about how much green space we have with our city park, Fairmount Park, one of the largest city park systems in our country. How much there is to explore at a place like the John Hines National Wildlife Refuge Center. How much time my kids have spent just, you know, walking through the Wissahickon and Valley Green here in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. I mean, we've had the opportunity to go to Hawk Mountain this summer and hike there. We've, you know, we've gone out to the Lehigh Valley and near Nature Preserve out there. I mean, we've had some great opportunities within an hour of the city of the city, or just in walking distance from our house on a bike ride or a hike. And I would love for so many other children to have that experience. Mm-hmm. I would love to be able to talk to you and the Black Birders Group about how we can do some more outreach to communities of color. Here's the thing, Taiki, you know, being a, you know, naturalist or a nature person or an environmentalist is not an exclusive group, right? It's not, while we may see images of, and I'll be quite blunt here, we might see images of just white folk doing that kind of work, white folk just engaging in hiking and white folk biking through the mountains. Black and brown communities have had a connection to the land for centuries, right? This is a part of our culture. Mm-hmm. We have always understood what, you know, the connection that we as people, as humanity has to land and water and air. We refer to Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. We have many references in our cultural practices about Mother Earth and nature and the land, and going back to, you know, that is where we were sort of born and going back into it. So I don't want folks of color to think that that's not for them, right? That birding is what, you know, I don't know, young people may not say corny anymore, but whatever the word is, birding can be something that that we can introduce to, you know, communities of color, and particularly young people in those communities. And they may find or learn something about themselves. They may find a new hobby. They may find a career. You've made it a career, Taiki, as in your work that you do at Audubon. But there are opportunities, and I would love to explore those opportunities. I am such a fan of you, but I'll say here, and I'll put it out there, I'm a big, big fangirl of Karina Newsom. When I found her Twitter account, I just fell in love with the work that she's doing, and the representation that she shows as a young Black woman that is totally dedicated to this this space, and she's doing great work introducing that to other young people as well. So that being said, I'm kind of rambling here because I'm honored that you would consider engaging me in Black Birders Week, because I'm not the birder. And I joke about this often, about how I was approached one time and I was talking and bragging as a mom about my son who's a birder. And they were like, "Oh, you're a Tyke's mom." And I'm like, "Huh? What are you talking about? I'm not that old." But I think the thought was, you know, at the time in the city of Philadelphia, there were probably two young Black kids, boys, who were birders. One was a 19, 20-year-old Tyke James, and the other was a 4 or 5-year-old Malcolm Bullock, who was my son. But that being said, I hope that now, you know, some 6, 7 years later, there are more than just the two of you in Philadelphia. And that when I say my son is a birder, it isn't assumed that it's one of these two incredibly smart and gifted young men. Like, and I'll say that because one of them being my son, but also the other being you, but that there are other young people of color who are birding, and that there are great organizations doing that work here in Philadelphia. But I think individuals like you who are sharing your love and interest with other young people is what makes a difference. And so however we can be supportive of that, whether it's here in Philadelphia, across the Commonwealth, there's so many great places to go birding in Pennsylvania. We have a mountain called Hawk Mountain.
Yeah.
So we can definitely support that effort. And I look forward to working with you to do that.
This episode is sponsored by our patrons on Patreon and our monthly supporters on Anchor. Wildlife Observer Network is a wildlife media project I started with some friends from Philly. On the network, we create podcasts, videos, blogs, and more. Go to wildlifeobservernetwork.com to check out more of our content. We look forward to enhancing what we currently do and expanding to other forms of wildlife content from our network of contributors. You can push this progress further by becoming a Patreon supporter today, with membership starting at only $1. Any contribution means a lot, so leave a comment, and don't forget to rate us so we're easier to find. I'm Tyke James, and thank you for listening to One Word for Wildlife. Be well.